This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's time to play like a Jet
with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Drops the throw. Steps up. Floats a bomb up the right seam. Looking for Anderson. He's got it. They're not going to catch him. He's going to go the distance. Touchdown. Sam Darnold dials it up to Robbie Anderson. 92 yards.
Anderson, too much deflected. And picked up Mosley. He'll take it in. It's a pick six and a touchdown.
Bell. Into the middle of that line, and it's a touchdown.
Big return for Crowder, 85 yards.
Pass thrown, there was contact with the quarterback, and it's incomplete. They got pressure on Prescott. It was Adams who came blitzing in.
Hill hit immediately when he got the handoff.
You know what's
the Q-inator.
Oh my gosh.
Listen, thank you.
From the TOJ Digital Studios, courtesy of The Athletic, a subscription-based sports news site for real fans. It's a great mix of national voices that you already know, like Jay Glazer, Mike Sandel, Mike Lombardi, the late, great Don Banks, or for The Athletic, too, and awesome local writers. In fact, one of my buddies, Harif Hassan, covers the Vikings, and I was just reading an awesome article that he wrote about this critical offseason for the Vikings. So if you're somebody that likes coverage of your own team, great, plenty of that. But if you're somebody that likes coverage of other teams like I do, you can get tons of great writers that cover teams besides your own. And as I said, great national writers too. And here's the best part. Not only do you get first-rate reporting, but you get all kinds of great analysis, advanced analytics, in-depth player profiles, and more. And it's completely ad-free. No clickbait, just great content. Pro sports, college sports, The Athletic has it all. So if you're not subscribing yet, you're really missing out. Want to get in on the action? I got a great deal for you. Just for being a Play Like a Jet listener, you can go to theathletic.com/overtime, all lowercase letters, and you'll get yourself 40% off a year subscription. 40%, that's a lot. Go to theathletic.com/overtime, all lowercase letters, and get all of this fantastic sports coverage in The Athletic for 40% off today. This is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at @PlayLikeAJet1. And I am joined for Midweek with Manish by the beat reporter and columnist covering the New York Jets for the New York Daily News, Manish Mehta. We're doing it a day early today because we've got Clayton Smarslaw coming on tomorrow for a report from Mobile, Alabama at the Senior Bowl and Senior Bowl practices. So really looking forward to that. But today, we're going to look back on the Rex Ryan era. This is part two of this series. Manish has a ton of fun stories from the Jets beat that we're going to get into over the next couple of weeks. Last week, we left off talking about the coaching staff that Rex Ryan picked and the fact that it was an interesting mix of guys that were already here on the existing staff and guys that Rex Ryan brought in with him from Baltimore. One of the guys on that staff was Sal Alossi, who was the strength and conditioning coach. And Manish, you mentioned the tripping incident with Sal Alossi, which we'll talk about later on, because obviously that's something where there's an entertaining story to tell. But I do want to talk about Mike Westhoff a little bit and just say that I'm with you. I really wish that he would have gotten an opportunity to be a head coach, because I think he would have been an awesome head coach. As you said, a stigma against special teams coaches. And I was hoping that John Harbaugh's success would open up the door for more. Up until now, it hadn't, until Joe Judge got hired by the Giants. So there's a part of me that actually wants Joe Judge to succeed, just so we get to see more special teams coordinators like Brant Boyer and like Darren Rizzi get an opportunity to be a head coach. But of course, I also hate the Giants, so the bigger part of me wants them to fail. So sorry, Joe Judge. I would like to see you do well, but you took the Giants job, so it is what it is. And then the other thing I wanted to talk about was Dennis Thurman, because what a character this guy was. And there are a ton of stories about this in Collision Low Crossers. And we talked about this during our series on 2011 with the author of that book, Nicholas Davidoff. And one of my favorite stories, Manish, is when the song Sounds of Silence by Simon and Garfunkel, one of the most famous songs of all time, was playing. And somehow there was a conversation that ensued where Nicholas Davidoff talked about the song. And Dennis Thurman said he had never listened to the song. And he said, come on, how could you have never listened to the song? And eventually he got Dennis Thurman to admit that he had heard of the song. But in the words of Dennis Thurman, he'd heard of it, but, quote, I never actually went ahead and listened to it. So that's kind of what Dennis Thurman was about. And you also heard Jamal Westerman on the show tell a funny Dennis Thurman story a couple of weeks ago, where Jamal would show up in 2009 when he was an undrafted free agent, still wearing his Rutgers stuff, trying to make the team. And Dennis Thurman cursed at him in a joking, playful way, saying, don't you have anything other than Rutgers gear? We're getting tired of that. So he is certainly a character, one of those guys where if you talk to somebody that worked with him or was one of his players, you could get hours and hours worth of stories. But now I want to talk a little bit about the players, Manish, because Rex made it clear that he was going to remake the Jets in his image. And he did that first with the coaching staff, and then he went out and made two major impact moves right off the bat in free agency. In fact, the folklore is that he was waiting on Bart Scott's steps as soon as midnight struck when free agency started. But he went out and he got his inside linebacker, Bart Scott, who had been one of his key guys in Baltimore. And then, of course, Jim Leonard, the safety, who has now done a really great job in Wisconsin, and he's another one that Rex wanted because he had been one of his key guys on the defense in Baltimore. So right off the bat, Rex striking in free agency, bringing in two impact players and two guys that he knew he could trust.
Yeah, Bart was the guy that he really targeted, the guy that he wanted, because he knew Bart's leadership traits. He knew that he was an emerging player, a guy who had really improved under Rex with the Ravens. You know, he wasn't a particularly highly touted player. He was undrafted for a reason. This isn't a guy who stood out in college, but he got better. He improved every year. Actually made the Pro Bowl in, I think it was 2006 with the Ravens. You know, ascending young player, you know, guy in his prime. I don't know if he was young, but, you know, he was in his prime and a guy that Rex believed could really be the engine of their defense in terms of leadership. And he was right. Bart was great those first couple years. He installed an attitude. He also helped along the players in terms of understanding Rex's scheme. And he was a guy that Rex felt could be their Ray Lewis. Obviously, you know, not that same skill, but, you know, that same value in terms of leadership. And he was right. It was a terrific signing. Bart was really a breath of fresh air, a leader, a productive, highly productive player in those early years, a guy that Rex zeroed in on for a reason. And that's what I was saying earlier about Rex's football IQ. He knew which type of players he needed right away to, you know, again, to help the guys who hadn't played for Rex understand Rex's scheme, understand what Rex was all about, and also, by the way, play at a high level. And Bart fit that to a T. Jim Leonard, to me, is one of the best stories, of those 2009, 2010 teams. I think He was 5'9". If you saw him in the locker room, you probably thought that he was a clubhouse guy or, you know, an intern. He didn't look like a football player. He was, I think I was taller than him, frankly. I think I saw him eye to eye, literally. But he was such a smart player, such an instinctive player. And, you know, I could make a very solid case that Jim Leonard was the best athlete on the 2009 Jets, and people would say, well, that doesn't make any sense. How could you say that? You know, they got these freak athletes in there. How could a guy who's like 5'9", 185, or whatever he was, be the best athlete? But this guy was a great basketball player. I think he ran track. He was an incredible pitcher in high school. He could have played baseball. I think it was track, maybe basketball. He played like four sports and was like incredible in high school and could have played at the college level in any of those sports, you know, maybe like a D3 for basketball because he wasn't tall enough, but just an incredible athlete, a smart, instinctive, underrated player that Rex, again, was smart enough to recognize would be so helpful to their team. And, you know, I think back to, you know, all those, you know, pivotal moments in those first few years, and I remember in 2010, and we can get into details when we talk about 2010, but I remember a primetime game in which the Jets lost in Foxborough 45-3, and a couple days earlier, Jim Leonard got hurt in practice, and it kind of threw their whole defensive scheme out of whack, and they didn't have enough time to adjust properly. And to this day, I don't know if the Jets would have won that game if Leonard never got hurt. I believe it was on a Thursday or a Friday in practice. If Leonard was in that game, I don't know if they would have won the game, but I can assure you that they wouldn't have gotten blown out in the fashion that they did because they just didn't have enough time to prepare without someone who was so invaluable. And then you saw about a month or so later the Jets go into Foxborough and beat the Patriots in the playoffs and avenge that loss. But just a really valuable piece to this puzzle. And Rex identifying both Bart and Jim Leonard was crucial, you know, to getting things off on the right foot.
Other key moves: the Jets make a deal with the Philadelphia Eagles, sending a 2009 fifth round pick and a 2010 conditional draft pick for former Pro Bowler Lito Shepard. So Rex gets a corner to help out with Darrell Revis. And then also a sad moment for Jets fans, as Lavernius Coles and the Jets could not come to terms on reworking his contract, so they end up releasing him. Manish, what do you remember about these moves? I know Rex had to have been excited to get Lito Shepard because he wanted somebody desperately across from Darrell Revis, who, as we'll get into later, he really believed in as the best cornerback in the league. Turned out to be right, by the way. And then Lavernius Coles ends up leaving, and a lot of Jets fans were sad about that because he was one of the most popular players of the last 20, 30 years or so. Just a guy that was always producing, always laying his body out on the line. And so for him to be gone was a moment that was sort of bittersweet. I know that everybody realized he wasn't at his best anymore, but still had been a productive player with Brett Favre the year before. So what do you remember about the Jets getting Lito Shepard and saying goodbye to Lavernius Coles?
Yeah, Coles was still a productive player statistically for Mangini in 2018. But look, he only played one more season before retiring. He was on the wrong side of 30. So I do understand, you know, the affinity for that the fan base had for him. Of course, you know, being with the Jets two different times, but he was at the tail end of his career. Even though statistically, you know, he wasn't horrible in that 2008 season. Lito Shepard was important. The thing about Rex that I learned quickly was that he viewed defense differently than a lot of people view defense, because, you know, most teams will say, and you even hear Joe Douglas say this now, you know, you build in the trenches and you build, you know, inside out. So you build from the line to that second level linebackers and then to your secondary. Rex always felt the opposite, you know, for better or for worse. He always felt that you should build from the outside in that you need to have strong cornerbacks. And there's a story that Ozzie Newsome, you know, would joke to people about, and Ozzie said this to me at one point as well, which was, you know, Rex would, no matter where Rex goes, ultimately, because, you know, Ozzie always felt that Rex would be a head coach at some point. Ozzie said that he would have a sign saying, you know, we'll work for cornerbacks, We'll do anything for cornerbacks. You know, cornerbacks wanted, because Rex could never have enough cornerbacks. He felt that that was the key to his system. If you have strong players on the back end, that would open up creative things for Rex in terms of doing things schematically. And you know, we obviously saw that because he ended up having the best cornerback in football at that time in Darrelle Revis. But just generally speaking, Rex always felt that philosophically you build from the outside in, and that's why, you know, he was so successful having Revis. And Lito, you know, Lito did a nice job in 2009. Obviously, these guys took it to a different level when they brought in Antonio Cromartie, and the Cromartie-Revis tandem was so good. You know, you rarely see that, because you rarely see a cornerback like Revis and then to pair him with another Pro Bowl-type player like Antonio Cromartie is rare, because teams don't like cornerbacks like that to shake free. So to have two of those types of players in Rex's system was like heaven for him, and he could do so many different things in other areas of the field. And that's, you know, what made that 2010 team better. You know, I think much better, frankly, than the 2009 team, because he had those two corners to work with. But yeah, Lito was important for that first season. And even though, you know, the fan base, you know, hated to see Coles go, ultimately, I think you know, they replaced him pretty well early in that 2019 season when they made a trade for Braylon Edwards.
Manish, the big question after all this was done was, what were the Jets going to do at quarterback? Because Brett Favre had been here in 2008, but nobody knew if he was going to come back. And the way things ended, there were a lot of Jets fans that were very bitter, very angry, and didn't necessarily want Brett Favre back. But it's my understanding that Rex Ryan was not one of those people. He did want Brett Favre back and tried to talk him into staying, right?
Yeah, and he mentioned that actually when he was introduced, that he wanted him back. I don't think that was practical. You know, if you're Rex, or if you're anybody in Rex's position, frankly, and you're coming into a new job, you've got Brett Favre as a possible option, it's hard to turn him down. Because remember, at that time, the Jets did not have the number 5 pick. They had the 17th pick in the draft. You didn't know what was viable in the draft at that position. No, they subsequently got really aggressive with Mike T and Eric Mangini making that deal to jump from 17 to 5. But at the time of the hiring, you know, I think the easy option would have been to, you know, have Brett Favre have the surgery and bring him back. I think it was pretty evident that Brett Favre was not done because of all the success he had in that season with the Vikings. But you know, I would have been interested to see what this team could have done in 2009 with a healthy Brett Favre, even though Favre is 39 or 40 years old. You know, you can't get that much farther than where Mark Sanchez went with the team. But I'm wondering if, you know, if Favre were the quarterback, would they made it to the Super Bowl? Could they have won the Super Bowl? You know, ultimately they had to turn the page at some point because of Favre's age. But the Jets, you know, went with Sanchez. They thought he was going to be their answer. After making that aggressive move up, and, you know, we can talk about the details about the pre-draft process and all that, but I think, you know, anybody in Rex's spot would love to have the known over the unknown at the quarterback position. And, you know, that's one of the things about Rex that I wish things would have been different for him. I wish that he would have had a quality veteran quarterback during his time, as opposed to Mark Sanchez, who had promise, you know, coming into the league, but ultimately, you know, didn't live up to all the hype. And Geno Smith, who obviously didn't live up to the hype either. And I always wonder if Rex had a veteran quarterback, you know, what could he have done? Could he have gone to the Super Bowl? Could they have been a sustainable playoff team for 3, 4, 5, 6 years? I tend to think yes, only because I've got a lot of faith in Rex's ability to handle the defense. I think that if he had a better quarterback, I thought this in Buffalo as well, if he had a better quarterback, that, you know, he could be a sustainable winner. And that's one of the things I know Rex thinks about now when he looks back at his tenure as a head coach. You know, what would have things been like if he was better equipped at that position?
Should mention that if you want to hear all about Brett Favre's one season with the Jets, we've got it in our archives, the 2008 season, as told by Kerry Rhodes. So you can go ahead and check that out. But Manish, once the Jets get the word that Brett Favre is not interested in coming back, it almost seems like they have no plan. And so this is what I wanted to ask you about before we get to draft day. Was the plan all along to draft somebody? Because it seemed like they had no sense of urgency in getting any kind of veteran in here.
Well, I don't think they would have been fine with Kellen Clemens being their 2009 starter, if that's what you're asking. And I also will say that Tannenbaum is aggressive by nature, so it's hard to definitively say that he knew that this type of trade could happen, but I think he was going to try to make something happen, because the notion of going into Rex Ryan's first season with Kellen Clemens as the quarterback, I could be wrong about this. I don't remember anyone telling me that they would have been fine with that. You know, maybe they would have, but like, if memory serves, I don't remember exactly what they planned to do, other than to try to make some kind of move in the draft. Again, they had to make an ultra aggressive move to even be in position to get Sanchez. If they didn't get Sanchez, and if they couldn't make a trade, and they were stuck, you know, for lack of a better word, at 17, what would they have done? That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that.
Manish, we'll get to the actual trade in a bit, but first, let's talk about the pre-draft process. So, Mark Sanchez was considered a guy that could go in the first round. There were some questions about him because he hadn't played that many games at USC. Josh Freeman from Kansas State was another guy that was thought to be in play at number 17 as the draft process unfolded. Big arm, somebody that people thought could be a really good quarterback. Everybody knew that Matthew Stafford was going to go number one overall to the Detroit Lions, which ended up happening. But then as the pre-draft process unfolded, Mark Sanchez started to rise up the board, and the story has now become stuff of legends, the meeting between Mark Sanchez, Rex Ryan, and Mike Tannenbaum. And it seems to me that the story Rex Ryan tells in his book, and that has been told in other places as well, about them going out to dinner and Sanchez just wowing them with his personality, and the whole joke about him getting onto the Harley and them looking at him like, oh my God, this kid rides a Harley, he's some sort of daredevil, and then him just saying, ah, just kidding, guys, and they all laughed. It almost feels like Rex sees a little bit of himself in Mark Sanchez as this pre-draft process unfolds, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, I think they were much different personality-wise. But those guys are both charismatic in their own way. Rex's charisma is well-documented. Sanchez has, you know, Mark is a very likable person. You know, I always felt him to be a very solid guy who is engaging. And, you know, look, he's a different guy in so many respects. Now that he's, you know, over 30, I think. I don't even remember how old he is now, but as opposed to right out of college. But, he, you know, he's a very engaging kid. He comes from a really good family. And I think that the confidence that Sanchez exuded at that time was very appealing to Rex. You know, you mentioned that Harley story. It's a great story. I think it's funny. I've always thought it was funny in hearing Rex retell the story and hearing Mark retell the story. That being said, that's not the reason that they wanted him. They wanted him because they thought that he had a future as a quarterback, a real future as a quarterback. It's interesting because Pete Carroll thought that Sanchez probably should have stayed in college one more year. In retrospect, perhaps, that was the sound advice. But it's hard to argue with team success, at least in that first year. But Sanchez was, he's a really good player in college. Statistically, he was a really good player. It's just that, those USC teams had such great talent, and Mark was thrown to a lot of open receivers, from what I remember. And I didn't dissect every play of his 2008 season, but I just remember, thinking, wow, these guys that he's throwing to are open by 3, 4, 5 yards. Not to say that anybody can make those throws, but those weren't necessarily tight window throws, but he had a lot of ability. He was a very young player at the time, and I can see why Woody, Rex, Tannenbaum all fell in love with the guy. They were hoping for a franchise quarterback, much like the Jets were hoping a couple years ago for a franchise quarterback. When you don't have one for such a long time in the when the franchise has not had one for such a long time, when you see a possibility in a guy, maybe you make more of it than what it actually is. Or maybe they saw Sanchez in the exact right light. Maybe Sanchez could have been a star player if circumstances were different, whether that means supporting cast or coaching, whatever. I mean, there's a million factors, and we'll never know the answer to it. I think that the biggest drawback, I guess, maybe that's not the right word, but the biggest criticism I'll have for Sanchez was that I'm not sure he had the inner confidence that he needed to overcome some of those early obstacles. I'm not saying that he wasn't confident in his own abilities. I just don't think that it was perhaps strong enough to overcome some of those early challenges that he had in his career, because you're always going to go through rough moments. And when you're in that type of environment, New York, it's such a crucible. Everyone's looking at you. He was the golden boy from the jump, and everything was dissected, where he was going. I remember a story one day. I don't remember if it was his rookie season or second season, but there was a story that he was out with somebody at a Broadway play, and then I got a call from my editor asking if I could find out what play it was so they could send a photographer out there. It was so ridiculous and over the top. And I just thought to myself, this is absurd from my perspective. I can't imagine what it is living that, as a young player, rookie player, second-year player. There was just so much on his shoulders. There was so much pressure on him. And thankfully for him, he had such a great supporting cast on the field that first year and that second year, but specifically that first year where he didn't have to carry the load. But look, he's a New York Jets quarterback. He was a good-looking guy, a young guy, and there was so much attention on him. And now I can't help but wonder if he was in a different place, a different environment, with a different set of circumstances in terms of people around him, whether his career would have turned out differently. I don't know if he would have ever, become a Pro Bowler, but maybe he would have found more success at a different place. Again, that's just me thinking out loud. But in that moment, in that pre-draft process, he was excited. He was engaging. And, the Jets fell in love with him. So once you fall in love with a player like that, you're going to do whatever it takes to try to move up and get him. And if you have Mike Tannenbaum's personality, in which you're super aggressive, if you love a guy, you're going to go up and you're going to try to get him. You saw that a number of different times with Tannenbaum throughout his tenure. You saw that, a few years earlier when he traded up to be in position to draft Darrelle Revis, and that obviously worked out. So, I think when they went through that draft process, pre-draft process, and they realized that they liked the kid as much as they liked the player, at that point, I don't think there was any turning back. They were going to do what they needed to do to be in position to draft him.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Before we get to the actual trade that landed Mark Sanchez on the Jets, and boy, was there an interesting story about this. Let's talk about the rise of Sanchez up the board. And as you said, the Jets falling in love with him. At what point do you think the Jets realized that being at number 17 just wasn't going to get it done? Because I remember in the lead up, everybody starting to think that Sanchez might actually go in the top five. Did the Jets come to the realization that they were going to have to pull something off? And did they start putting the wheels in motion in their minds of, okay, what can we do to go up higher, go up to the top five and find a way to get this guy? Is that what they had decided that they wanted to try to do?
Well, they knew that Sanchez was not going to drop to 17. And obviously, if you looked at the teams in the top five, top seven or so, there's an obvious relationship between Mike Tannenbaum and Eric Mangini. You know, as we said earlier, look, these guys are legitimately friends. And so there's an obvious trading partner there. Look, I don't believe that there were serious talks months in advance. This wasn't a Jets-Colts situation with them moving up a couple years ago to be in position to draft a quarterback that ultimately became Sam Darnold. It wasn't like that. I just think that things get heated a lot closer to the draft. And they certainly got heated a lot closer to the draft back then. So it wasn't as if there were details being hashed out a month earlier. I think this was much more of a, as we get closer. I mean, obviously there's conversations that go on prior to that about, would you be amenable to moving the pick? Yeah, sure we would, but we would probably need this or that. But those are loose conversations and conversations that teams have frequently. But I don't think things got really heated until much closer, until days before the draft. So, when you have a relationship like Mangini and Tannenbaum had, I think you can strike a deal pretty quickly because you kind of know what each other likes, especially given the fact that Mangini just came from the Jets, so he already knew that personnel inside and out. So when you want to try to cherry pick players, if you're Mangini in a potential trade, you know which guys you like and which guys might not make sense for what you're trying to build. Just as we talked about Bart Scott coming to the Jets with Rex Ryan to establish the Rex Ryan culture, I think it was equally important for Eric Mangini to have some of his guys, guys that he coached in New York to help him as he started off with the Browns. So I think a deal, in this particular circumstance can come together pretty quickly, just given these weird dynamics at play and given Eric Mangini's familiarity with that roster.
Let's talk about those weird dynamics, because the way that the circumstances unfolded was crazy. Eric Mangini, after getting fired by the Jets, winds up in Cleveland as their head coach. And now the Jets are looking to get into the top five. And like you said, Cleveland's sitting there at number five. And so I guess this is a situation where it's a good thing that Mangini and Tannenbaum remain close friends, because if they weren't, I can't imagine that a deal would have ever gotten done. And by the way, this was not the only deal, nor the only major deal that would get done between the Jets and Browns this particular season. And we'll get to the other one later on. But here is where, as you said, knowing what Eric Mangini likes comes into play, because when you read the specifics of the deal back now, it boggles your mind that the Jets were able to move up for this price. They gave up Kenyon Coleman, who was a backup defensive end, Abram Elam, and Brett Ratliff, who had been a third-string quarterback, along with their 17th pick and their second rounder to move up from 17 to 5. You tell somebody right now that they're going to try and move up from 17 to 5 in the 2020 NFL draft, and they're going to tell you it's going to cost the king's ransom. This is nothing close to a king's ransom. So clearly the fact that Mangini had an affinity for some of his former players really helped out the Jets here. Talk to me a little bit about what you remember about this whole process of the trade coming together.
Well, I remember thinking that the Jets ripped the Browns off. At the time. That was my initial reaction. And look, full disclosure, I hadn't really examined and studied Mark Sanchez throughout his college career. I just did my work in the run-up to the draft like, you know, I typically do. I don't profess to be a college football expert, but I did think at the time that Sanchez was a coveted quarterback and a potential franchise quarterback. And you're right to give up, you know, to give up a one and a two and then three, inconsequential players, to be honest with you, to move that amount of spots is really a stroke of genius by Mike Tannenbaum. You can never get away with doing something like that now. You'd have to give up, you know, future ones. And I don't really understand what Mangini was doing, to be honest with you. I don't quite understand why he valued those particular players like he did. But hey, you know, if you're the Jets and you're Tannenbaum, you know, you're not going to complain. You're going to make the offer, and if the guy accepts it, you say thank you very much, and hopefully things work out for the Browns. But that's not really your concern. I just thought it was a terrific deal on paper at the time, and you know, I don't remember what those draft picks turned into for Cleveland, but you know, Sanchez didn't turn out to be a star player, but he did win four road playoff games, or was a part of four teams that won four road playoff games and had, you know, his fair share of good moments early in his career. So you know, maybe it wasn't you know, as lopsided as I initially believed and what most people initially believed, but you know, in that moment, you got to give Tannenbaum so much credit for being able to give his new head coach a potential franchise quarterback without giving up a king's ransom.
It's funny you should mention that you're not sure what those draft picks turned into, Manish, because I can tell you right now, the Browns traded down a second time. Tampa jumped up to grab Josh Freeman, who we mentioned before, the quarterback from Kansas State. And so at number 21, they grabbed Alex Mack, who turned out to be a Pro Bowl center, so pretty good pick there. And then with the other pick that they got from the Jets, number 50 overall, they got Muhammad Massaqua, the wide receiver from Georgia. He didn't do that much. So the second rounder didn't really pan out, but that first rounder, Alex Mack, was a really good one. And Eric Mangini once again showing his eye for talent. By the way, that wasn't the only move that the Jets were going to make on draft day. It wasn't quite as splashy, but to open up the second day of the draft, which began with the third round, Mike Tannenbaum dealt the Jets' third, fourth, and seventh rounders to the Lions for their third round pick, which was the first one in the third round. And they grabbed Sean Green, the running back out of Iowa. Sean Green had his moments. We all remember that big play against the New England Patriots in the 2011 AFC Championship game. But I suppose the thinking at the time was that Thomas Jones was getting older, his contract was pretty expensive, and they were going to have to deal with that. So this was sort of a proactive move to grab Thomas Jones' successor, right?
Yes, absolutely. They thought he'd be a bruiser. They thought he'd be a guy who would ultimately take over as the lead back. That didn't happen, and Thomas Jones, he wouldn't go away. He's such a good player at a later stage of his career. He was obviously a pedigree player. I believe he was a top five pick by the Cardinals back in the day, and he kind of one of those late bloomers where, you know, he became so effective for them, and they had that nice 1-2 punch. But Sean Green didn't really, you know, he never really lived up to what the Jets thought he would be. He did have a couple 1,000 yard seasons, you know, later a few years down the road, but never really that bell cow that they envisioned. And his career really petered out pretty quickly. You know, after his rookie contract, he ended up going to Tennessee for a couple of years, and then retired before he was 30, I believe. And I don't know if he played in any other leagues, but yeah, that was their thinking. You know, to get that bruiser. It was a really interesting draft in that they only had three picks. That's so unusual. Mm-hmm. It was an interesting philosophy at the time in the organization, because there is a quality versus quantity discrepancy or disagreement in philosophy. For example, you know, Terry Bradway, you know, former GM, then had been a trusted advisor and scout for Mike Tannenbaum. After Tannenbaum took over as a GM, Bradway always believed in the quantity over quality approach, which is what the Patriots do, for example. Bill Belichick loves to take as many stabs, you know, at the draft as possible and take as many swings at the plate as you can. And if you have more swings, you have more opportunities to land the right players. Whereas Tannenbaum had, you know, as I've said a bunch already, he had more of an aggressive approach, which is let's go with quality over quantity. I'd rather have two or three players who I really believe in instead of, you know, seven or eight guys that I take shots on that I'm lukewarm about. And so when you looked at that 2009 draft, you had Sanchez and Sean Green in rounds one and three, and then you had a day three pick, or I can't remember if it was a 2 or 3 day draft back then, but you had a 6 round pick in Matt Slauson, who they really didn't even know they were going to pick. They kind of just popped in the tape, and it was between Slauson and another guy, and they ended up going with Slauson, and that was kind of a stab in the dark. So those are your three picks, a quarterback, a running back, and an interior offensive lineman. No defensive players in the Rex's first draft, and only three players, and that's not sustainable. And unless these three guys all become Pro Bowlers, you know, you can't go through a season having only three players in your draft, because you build through the draft. So you want to get your foundation players through the draft. And while I applaud Mike Tannenbaum's, you know, zeal and aggressiveness and go for it type of mentality, three players in one draft is, you know, that's, again, I don't necessarily subscribe to that being a sound strategy.
Matt Slauson, strangely enough, ended up becoming one of the best offensive linemen that the Jets drafted over the last 10 years. And not to throw any shade on Matt Slauson, who is a perfectly acceptable offensive lineman, but that should tell you a lot about why the Jets are where they are right now, because that is the level of investment that they've been making in the offensive line. Slauson in the 6th round, who turned out to be a serviceable starter. But I think, as you said, when you look back at this draft, the tale here is all the deals that Tannenbaum made and all the aggressive, bold moves. He traded a pick for Lito Shepard. He traded all those picks to go up and get Mark Sanchez. He traded all the picks to go up and get Sean Green. He was putting all his eggs in one basket. And Manish, I guess, as we're going to find out later on, and as you already know, if you followed the Jets at the time, this was very much a riverboat gambler strategy by Tannenbaum. And while it looked good early on, ultimately it ended up blowing up in his face a bit.
It did. Again, I don't think that's a sustainable approach. In the short term, it can work. It's possible. But it's not something that can propel you for, you know, an extended amount of time. And even when we discussed the following season's draft, there was only 4 players in that draft. So you're talking about only 7 players drafted in Rex Ryan's first 2 seasons. You know, you need more picks. You need a better foundation if you want to be good and play at a very high level as a team for a very long time. And the idea of having only 7 draft picks in the first 2 years, you know, that leaves little margin for error. And when you look at the players that the Jets got in those first 2 years, those first 7 players, how many of them were foundation players? One, maybe two.
Mike Tannenbaum's strategy certainly risky, and it would get riskier, as we're going to see later on in this series. Not safe at all the way that you would want to play it with your family or with yourself if you're looking to protect yourself, which is where Simply Safe comes in. If there's a break-in, Simply Safe uses real video evidence to give police an eyewitness account of the crime, and that means police dispatch up to 350% faster than for a normal burglar alarm. Outdoor cameras and doorbells alert you when anyone's approaching your home. Entry motion and glass break sensors guard the inside. And Simply Safe protects your home from fires, water damage, and carbon monoxide poisoning with 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week monitoring by live security professionals. Protect your home with Simply Safe. Go to simplysafe.com/overtime today and get free shipping on your order, plus a 60-day money-back guarantee. That's simplysafe.com/overtime to save on home security today. simplysafe.com/overtime. Manish, thanks for coming on for part two of this series, looking back at the Rex Ryan era, all the great stories from that time period. And we've got so many more to tell, including tons that Manish has never told before. So some real exclusives you're going to hear on the podcast over the next couple of weeks. In the meantime, make sure that you check out our recent podcasts, including Jamal Westerman talking about the experience firsthand of going through all the off-season workouts and drills and combines and everything that leads up to these players going to the NFL. You can hear about his journey that started with an injury at the end of his season at Rutgers and a surgery that he needed to have all the way up through getting to the Jets as an undrafted free agent. A unique opportunity to hear a firsthand story like that, so don't miss it if you haven't checked it out yet. Answered some really cool mailbag questions over the weekend with the Very Big Deal Chris Nimbley, including whether or not the Jets should consider using the transition tag on Robbie Anderson, what they should do about Jamal Adams, and some fun non-football questions too, including a little bit about pizza and television shows. What constitutes real pizza, and what are some of our favorite shows that we're watching right now? So if you missed those, or even part one of the Sam Darnold Project with Michael Nania, which we released yesterday, we're going through all 26 starts of Sam Darnold's career. Michael watched every single play, came up with a grade for each game. He's got his criteria. And then we go through each game, hit the highs and lows, and explain the grading system and what was different in each game that led to that particular grade. It's a really fun project. We covered the first three games of Sam Darnold's career yesterday. We're going to do more next week. And then tomorrow, of course, don't miss Clayton Smarslock's report from Mobile, Alabama and the Senior Bowl, because we are going to have some exclusive content there talking about some of the big prospects that you should be keeping your eye on for the New York Jets in April, because as we know, this draft is going to play a huge part in where this team goes over the next couple of years. If you haven't had a chance to give us a five-star review on iTunes, please go ahead and do that. If you're a fan of the show and you're looking for an easy way to help out, that's the perfect way to do it. It doesn't take you much time. It doesn't cost you any money, but it does a lot for us. So if you could do that for us, we'd really appreciate it. Make sure you're reading Manish in the New York Daily News. He'll be back next week for part three of our series, looking back at the Rex Ryan era with some never before told stories. And for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts, you know where to go. It's Turn on the Jets Digital and turnonthejets.com.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.